getting back on the economy today. A lot of fun stuff to talk about. Well, fun. I guess some of it's challenging, too. I mean, housing in Montana. We'll be talking about short-term rentals and that market and how that might have changed things here. Brianna Russell with the BBER will be on board for that, as will Jeff Michael, too, who's head of the BBER. It's the Bureau of Business and Economic Research at the University of Montana. Every time I get him on the air, I brag about how much stuff there is. I guess I'm a geek sometimes for data like that, but there's a lot of good stuff on their website. I point you to that an awful lot. But their focus here for this mid-year economic update is this digital economy. You know, data centers, high tech. I know no one's talking about that. Is this the new Montana gold rush? Well, right? You have something to say about that. Let's get informed today. Voices from Montana. Let's just get into the show here without a whole lot of setup. There's plenty of things to talk about. There's some news out today about our employment numbers. We lost some 23,000 jobs in July. So we'll put that on the plate. This focus for the BBER this year, mid-year economic updates or outlook series, is on the digital economy. But and we will get to that. We can not talk about that too. But I think housing is going to be a big thing for us here. I think the labor force is something we have to really look at here as well. Taxes. I don't know that we're going to put that on the plate, but there's going to be a lot of talk about restructuring our tax system in Montana. And that's really part of this whole transitional economy for the state. You know, we've had resource, we've had agriculture, and we just had a lot of blue collar stuff going on here too. But now, high tech, how big a part of it, can it play in the economy too? And then does that force us to change things when it comes to our tax structure? That's something the legislature will be tackling too. And they'll, I'm sure, rely on a lot of information coming out of the Bureau of Business and Economic Research, the BBER at the University of Montana. Jeff Michael heads that program. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Tom. Thanks for having us on the show.
Thanks for coming on. And we introduced Brianna Russell as well, another economist with the BBER. And kind of her focus will be short-term rentals. And that's a market I think a lot of people are looking at getting into. Brianna, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. It's Friday. Only two more working days this week. I think you guys know how that feels. And Jeff, you guys were just on. You kind of wrapped up this tour, right? This mid-year economic update, number of cities. Yesterday, I think it concluded in Missoula. I'm just going to throw that out there. What was the focus of this? And then what kind of response did you get? These things, we've said in the past, they're available to the public, and there's a ton of information there for these businesses to make decisions on. And I'm curious about that feedback about the information you're sharing.
Yeah, well, this year, in addition to our sort of general overview of the economy, we focused this summer on the technology sector in Montana, and also some work we've been doing about what it might look like to have one of these big large-scale data centers into Montana. And there's a lot of interest in these topics. I tell you, attendance was up. Questions were up. We were running long on the program because so many people have so many more questions than we're used to. So a real high level of engagement and interest in these topics right now. And there's nothing like spending 2 weeks getting around the state in the summertime. So it's a great experience.
Yeah, it really is. Did Brianna go with you on this one?
Brianna did not go with me. I had her back in Missoula, keeping the data work moving forward.
Well, Brianna, you missed that opportunity because those guys go out and they're just big time on the town.
We traveled Todd O'Hare with the chamber went with us, as well as Christina Henderson with the High Tech Business Alliance. So we had a great panel.
Yeah. It looks like it too. And I always encourage people to attend these if they can. Brianna, why don't we start with your expertise here too. There's a lot to look at in our economy, but one thing to focus on is the price of housing, because that is affecting, well, people in every pocket of our economy when it comes to employment, especially. And it's not an easy thing to try, and I don't want to use the word manipulate, but try and to shape because there's so many market forces involved in this. What's your overview? What are we looking at, and what do we kind of need to do? What's happening that's good? What's happening that needs correction?
You know, the housing affordability is a real struggle right now. I know that, you know, Jeff had presented on this yesterday at the Missoula Outlook Seminar, but looking at Western Montana, affordability is a big challenge, you know, to afford the median priced home that takes about, I think it was 60% of the median income to afford that in the Kalispell region. So, you know, although home prices are starting to kind of stabilize after that huge post-COVID boom, it's still a challenge right now.
Yeah. And people have kind of responded because they're wondering, does the short-term rental market, I don't know if it needs a ton of regulation. I'm nervous about feeling like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, we got to get a government hand in this, so to speak. As you can tell, I'm not a big fan of big government here. But how much has that played a part? Is it kind of a cause and effect sort of thing?
You know, it really depends on the specific housing market that you're looking at and, you know, how important rental units are, long-term rental units are in that market and the whatnot. We haven't here at BBER yet looked at the specific impacts of short-term rentals on housing prices in Montana, but I know that there are a higher percentage of these dedicated type short-term rentals that could compete for long-term rental housing in the strong tourism areas. So places like Gallatin County, Flathead County, Madison County, those places are going to see a higher percentage of their housing stock being allocated towards short-term rentals. I mean, it's not a crazy large number, but it is there. Literature shows that there's a positive relationship between short-term rental presence and housing prices. So it is something that, you know, should be talked about and considered.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's something that we can look at a bit deeper here.
Yeah. And let's do, Jeff, you know, from your position, head of the BBER, this is an economic opportunity, but it also comes with some consequences. So do you take one step forward, one step sideways, maybe try to keep going forward while there's a step back here or there? How do we manage? Because housing, as I think we've all come to realize, is a big roadblock for business expansion for some people.
Well, it is. Housing costs are an issue in Montana, and we can certainly talk more about that. As Brietta mentioned, the data shows, you know, it's particularly acute in western Montana. Some other parts of Montana, it's a little bit better, but housing affordability is still a challenge. It's a challenge across the United States. You'll have a hard time going somewhere else and finding substantially better conditions. It's really become a bit of a national problem with rising rents, rising home prices, and now much higher mortgage rates. But when it comes to short-term rentals, they can play a role in certain markets. Certainly, there are some housing units that are applied to, you know, Airbnbs that could be in the housing market. We find it's a relatively small share in most places in Montana, and not the primary driver. And part of what we've done in our research is actually just try to quantify some of the income that actually flows to Montana households because they're able to access this tourism market. And it's really some impressive flows of money. It's also a tool that people can use to supplement their income and help to cope with some of the cost of living. So we find that there's been significant activity in what, you know, are called home shares, where people may be renting out a portion of their property or renting their property just for a small parts of the year. That's really particularly pronounced in the Kalispell area, where you see a lot of people are able to take advantage of that peak summer market to generate a little extra revenue. And then you also see unique properties. You know, this market has created opportunities for people to earn extra revenue through sort of unique things. It could be making or renting out your camper or glamping spaces that are that you're able to tap into that tourism economy directly yourself to generate some additional income. So, you know, we can't talk about short-term rentals and sort of paint it with a broad stroke. They come in a lot of different types and styles, and people have really been creative with ways that they take advantage of it. So, you know, our research here is just sort of focused a little bit more on those income flows and some of the ways that it has benefited Montanans.
Well, while we're on this topic, Brietta, why don't you kind of get into some of the X's and O's that stand out for you, that the public, you know, little tidbits of information. And then the question I want to really ask is, you know, is this market ever going to be affordable again, so to speak? Or is this the new normal $3,000 a month mortgages?
Right. So related to the short-term rental income flows, it was really interesting to see just how much of the short-term rental activity is kind of focused in the regions near the national parks. And I mean, it makes sense. People are traveling there. People want to see Glacier and see Yellowstone. But I think the number was like 60% of reservations or revenue was occurring in, you know, either the Kalispell region or the Bozeman region. So that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that revenue is also captured by these home share type hosts that Jeff had referenced. So people who are either, you know, listing a living space in their basement or an accessory dwelling unit, something like that, where people are taking advantage of the market to, you know, generate some supplemental income. And in the overall output that we find, the number of jobs created, the labor income generated by short-term rental activity in Montana, about half of that was generated because of the additional income that hosts were spending after they had earned it. Mm. So that was pretty notable. It's cool to see how much, you know, Montana hosts can benefit from this market, which is something that I don't think is talked about as much.
I got a break, but we'll come back and ask that question about sort of our new economy in terms of, we see headlines about the markets and some foundational things that are good, but I think at the home level, we're feeling a pinch, and it's making us nervous about things. So do we have kind of two economies going on here? A lot of things to focus on here when we're talking about the economy. Got a call in. We'll maybe we'll try to shift toward taxes. That's one of the caller here, Skip from Hamilton. We'll try to get to that as well. As we talk about our overall economy, the focus is going to be on our digital economy here with Jeff Michael, who is the director for the BBER, Bureau of Business and Economic Research. But part of that research was a recent report about short-term rentals and the impact and housing. And it's always it's a big part of our quandary here in Montana right now. Welcome back here to Voices of Montana. Brietta Russell, an economist with the BBER, also with us here to talk about housing here. And Jeff, we've got to get on to some of these other things too. But let's kind of finish up here with the big question I'm talking about. Is this the new normal? The $3,000 mortgage. And, you know, I know family members who have had to bite the bullet and be real brave in a very difficult market, you know, and plop down a commitment, you know, for 50, 40 or more percent, like Brietta said, 60% of their income to have housing. I don't know. It scares me a little bit that if that becomes the new normal, are our wages going to respond to that?
Yeah. So our, you know, mortgage costs and buying a house has certainly become a lot more expensive. I wish I could say that it wasn't the new normal, but in some ways I think it is. A big part of the issue, particularly if you're early in your home buying journey as an adult and you haven't benefited from the appreciation, is our mortgage rates, right? So mortgage rates have really increased, and they've increased just in the past month or so. I wish I could produce a forecast for lower mortgage rates going forward, but that's just really not what we're seeing, that we expect them to stay at sort of this elevated level above 6% for a while. Home prices in Montana, they certainly escalated as well. They've leveled off. And so we've been making progress bit by bit as incomes gradually rise and home prices have sort of leveled off. But, you know, without any significant relief from these mortgage rates, it's going to be continue to be very, very difficult for people to get into the market. You know, the movement from the, and we've done a probably a better job in Montana building rental housing than sort of homes, particularly sort of starter homes and homes that young people can get into. So in my mind, that's the worst part of the housing market is the, you know, moving from the rental market to owning your, you know, your first home has become more challenging than it's been in generations. We're seeing people stay in the rental market for a much longer period. And we're seeing higher income people in the rental market that, you know, in past generation would have bought, purchased a home by now. So it's definitely creates challenges.
This is a question for both of you, but I'll start with you, Brianna. What does this new normal look like in 5 years from now? What does the impact of, you know, first time home buyer buying being very difficult, challenging, what does that have on the overall economy?
You know, it's hard to say because at the same time, we also have the new property tax code that, you know, we're not sure what's going to happen with that. We can theorize what's going to happen with, you know, second homes, how they're going to translate to potentially, you know, being sold. So it's kind of hard to predict in the face of this kind of new policy. But when you have a really unaffordable market, it's hard to attract, you know, young workers. So we could see impacts on the labor market, but we're also seeing some increase in the wages. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and a lot of people are in that boat, I think, including, you know, the 150 who are going to be in the legislature, about what exactly do we do about taxes. And as, you know, property taxes are a big haul in Montana, I'm going to ask that question. Jeff, what do we do about taxes in Montana?
Well, we just did a lot in the last legislative cycle.
Was it good? Was it the right direction?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the intent was good, and I think it's had some impacts, right? I mean, we've seen most homeowners, particularly at that median price level, have seen a reduction in their taxes as a result of implementing the first stage of that property tax reform. Now, some of that burden was shifted onto high-priced properties as well as commercial and business properties. And so, you know, that's created some challenges and some opposition to it. But, you know, in terms of the intent of lowering the living costs for sort of the average Montana family and making it a little bit easier to get into and afford a house, it did lower those tax bills. And so, you know, it's not a silver bullet solution, but it did make things sort of incrementally better. Now, the second stage of that reform is the one that's being implemented this year, the second home tax that's gotten a lot of headlines. So we'll see. You know, I just got my new assessment notice yesterday. I don't have a second home, but I imagine those are starting to land in people's mailboxes. And then in the next month or two, we'll start to see the actual tax bills for people that are going to be subject to that tax. And it will have also some potential impacts across the property tax spectrum. So, you know, we're waiting to see exactly how those details shake out, and also waiting to see if the housing market reacts to it. So there could be It creates financial incentive to sort of change the use of some properties and move them maybe into a long-term rental market from a short-term. Well, if you're in a community where there's a lot of Airbnbs and short-term rentals, that could have an impact. If you have a second home and you haven't had it on Airbnb in the past and now your property taxes are higher, you might think a little bit harder about listing it to generate some revenue to pay that bill. So there's a lot of interesting impacts. And, you know, as data nerds, we're excited to study it over the next year or two. And then maybe we'll have some more solid information that, you know, policymakers can use to decide whether they want to, stick with the changes that they've made or fine tune it or make larger adjustments.
Is there any low hanging fruit out there regulation wise or incentive wise? And again, you know, I've said I don't know. I don't think, you know, government intervention is the best thing for the markets in a lot of ways. But, you know, in a circumstance like this, there's going to be temptation to do that. Is there any low hanging fruit? And I'll ask you both this question. Brianna, I'll start with you. And I know you guys, you know, you collect data and you analyze data. And then you kind of leave it there to a degree for legislators and others to analyze as well. But you guys can make recommendations too, and I think people are looking toward that. So is there any kind of low-hanging fruit that can be initiated to help with this?
To help with? Short-term rentals?
It's just the whole housing because it's all connected. Taxes, the short-term rental markets, and, of course, the fact that we haven't had the right kind of infrastructure and development going on. Is there anything out there we can do immediately?
Developing new housing is mm-hmm. easier when it's cheaper. So that's something we know. So if we're wanting to incentivize building more starter homes, we could consider policies geared towards that. But as far as a simple low hanging fruit policy, it really kind of depends on what the particular goal is. And I'm not sure that there is just a simple answer, a simple solution. It's a bit more complicated than that, I think.
I know.
I don't know, Jesse, if you have something to add to that.
Well, I mean, ultimate solution, yeah, we need more supply. And we've actually done quite a lot here to try to reduce the regulatory barriers to adding supply through zoning. But it's not a quick fix. Yeah, it takes a while.
That's Jeff Michael again, director of BBER. He'll stay with us. Thank you, Brianna, for your research and for sharing that with us here today. And we'll be talking to you down the road. I know housing, the issue is not going away right away. So thank you, Brianna.
Thank you.
Glad you guys could make it today. Hope you're doing well in your neighborhood in Miles City, KMTA. Also, good folks in Glendive, KDZN. And just wrapped up a trip last week to Helena, KOFI. Still wanting to get back there. You get up into the Flathead and you get an itching to just, I ain't going anywhere. This is where I'm going to be. We're with Jeff Michael here today, Bureau of Business and Economic Research. He's the director of that program and just wrapped up their mid-year economic outlook seminar series. We heard from Brianna Russell, did something separately about short-term rentals and wanted to get that out, the information, how that impacts our housing market. Now it's this digital economy, Jeff. I have a lot of questions. I think one of the burning questions for a lot of people is, data centers and the energy that's required there and the resources that they're going to need. I think we have to understand those questions in context of how important, it is this next kind of economy, so to speak, the data center and high-tech economy. You've questioned it here on economicoutlookseminar.com for the BBER. Are data centers and high-tech the new Montana gold rush? And I like how you put that because there's good and bad in a gold rush.
There absolutely is, yes.
So what do we have? Do we have more good or do we have more bad?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's – two aspects of this tech economy. They're linked, but not tightly linked when it comes to Montana. We've been one part of the tech economy has just been the growth of high-tech jobs, particularly in the computer sector, software sector, information services. A lot of those, those are dependent on data centers. A lot of them are utilizing AI. Whether that AI data center is in Montana or Louisiana may not be particularly important to developing those jobs. But we've seen a lot of growth of that in Montana. Our estimate is the tech center of Montana was about 3.5% of the Montana economy back in the mid-2010s. It's grown to be 5% of the Montana economy. It's growing twice as fast as the Montana economy as a whole, particularly when it comes to jobs that are designing computer and technology systems, as well as we have software developers in Montana. And those jobs pay a lot more than the average jobs in Montana. They're helping drive our economic growth forward. They're putting a lot of tax revenue into Helena through our income tax code. And so, you know, that's one side of the tech economy. Now, there's also the infrastructure of the new tech economy and this enormous demand for data centers and everything that comes with it, including the energy development. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's quite a bit different. Those data centers, when we talk about the U.S. economic growth, are responsible for about half of the growth that the U.S. economy has seen in the past 2 years. So it's an incredible amount of capital that's flowing into developing data centers around the U.S. Now, we haven't seen the development of those kinds of data centers yet in Montana. We have some of the older, more traditional, smaller data centers here, but these massive sort of what's called hyperscale data centers we have not seen yet. There's been some proposals kicked around that have gone out and some have withdrawn. But right now, you know, the big proposal on the table is this really large data center that's proposed for north of Billings by Quantica Corporation. And so we've done some analysis of what that could look like in terms of Montana's economy, as well as if there's others that could follow.
And that analysis, I mean, the amount of property taxes that they would pay, I think this came out of your seminar, and we had Ken Adelblue, our reporter, on it. Like it would be $33 million, but it would surpass all the property taxes of like the next four largest counties combined. I mean, that's a significant amount of influence, financial influence in the markets. Are those numbers numbers correct?
Mostly, yeah. So, okay. One of the things that we analyzed was the potential property tax benefit. I think one of the things that's hard for people to understand about these data centers is the amount of investment and what that investment looks like, because they're so different than anything that we've ever seen before in Montana. So, for instance, we modeled a 500 megawatt data center. What Quantica is proposing is actually to build two of those, a 1,000 megawatt data center in two 500 megawatt phases. But just the 500 megawatt data center represents a $20 billion capital investment by the people that are doing that. $20 billion. Yes. You've not seen anything of that scale before. So that's huge. But what's important to understand is of that $20 billion, almost $12 to $15 billion of that, the vast majority of it is actually just computer servers and chips. High-end, just think of this as high-end computers and servers. Often, you know, they're not manufactured in Montana. This equipment is incredibly expensive, and it will be placed inside these data centers. That doesn't do a lot for the Montana economy. We're not making these computer chips or these computers. Someone's just bringing them in and placing them there. Mm-hmm. But where it does affect the Montana economy is in property taxes. So, because we do have a business equipment tax in Montana, data centers have a favorable rate. So there's been some controversy that they get to pay at a 0.9% rate, and the other business equipment might be a bit higher. But we've never seen business equipment in the billions and tens of billions of dollars in that tax roll before. So we, you know, estimate that that data center could generate $33 million a year in tax payments. And the vast majority of that is not coming from taxing the structure or the land. Almost all of that is actually coming from the business equipment tax, the tax on those computer chips and servers that are inside that data center that cost billions and are being refreshed every 3 to 5 years. So that's why it generates some really big dollars that can flow as new revenue to the state and the local governments, but it also funds property tax reductions to Montanans. So we modeled that $33 billion, roughly 19, you know, following sort of current Montana statute, about $19 million of that would be new revenue to the state or local governments that they could use, you know, for education and other services. But a large share of that, $13 to $14 million of that revenue, would really be funding reductions in the mill rates in those local communities, especially in the school districts around where you put in this new property tax base. But, you know, if we were to put this in Yellowstone County, everyone in Yellowstone County would see some reduction in their mill rates just by adding such a large new taxpayer to the community. So that's sort of where the impact is. And one of our more interesting findings is, you know, what is taking a computer chip manufactured in Taiwan and placing it in a building in Montana? What's that do for the Montana economy? Well, the biggest thing it does is property taxes.
Yeah. And there's I want to share this story, but I kind of want to ask the question about, are we in a bubble here? But we spoke with Bob Morris yesterday. I know a colleague of yours. He's the Lance Energy Chair at Montana Tech and has a number of white papers out regarding this. A couple of things that he noted was that Quantica, and you guys released some of that information as well, they have got plans. They're more of an energy development company looking for a data center. When these data centers say, you know, part of our plan is to bring our own power, BYOP, I thought, mm-hmm. Well, you need a lot of power. How are you going to finance that? I thought maybe that was more of a selling point pitch than it was something that was going to, you know, flat work out in reality. But it looks like from Quantica's plans that is a direction, and they're going to seriously attempt to do that and maybe even, you know, accomplish that. And then he made a note about, if you remember Montana's mining industry, it was the mining industry that required a lot of power, and they're the ones that paid for the infrastructure. He's kind of sees this happening in that same format where data centers could be paying for this new infrastructure and new power growth that we need. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good thought, and that's likely. There's certainly increasing movement for data centers to bring their own power to the table. I think this project in the area north of Billings was originally conceived as a power project, and this data center opportunity is sort of added to what was originally conceived as a power development project. So they're looking to invest a lot in solar production right off the bat. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see that, but they're interested in wind. We could see, and I imagine if they're getting a data center up and running, we'll probably see some gas generation as well. But, you know, there's concerns that you mentioned a bubble. You know, we don't know exactly how big this future demand for AI and the power to support it will be. We know it's extremely large, and we know there's development going on around the country. So, you know, one of the advantages of having data centers bringing their own power and being willing to make that investment is that it sort of keeps some of the risk associated with that expenditure with the developers themselves. So that's one of the benefits of that. And Quantica is prepared to bring a lot of energy to the market to power their data center and potentially power others in other locations.
Is there any resemblance to the internet, the dot-com bubble, the AI bubble? I mean, And is it, I don't know, it's kind of, like you say, it's speculative. So go ahead and speculate. Are we hyping this up a little too much?
It's hard to know. I mean, there is some resemblance to it, right? In the sense of the rapid acceleration, the huge amounts of capital flowing to it. In the case of the internet, it resulted in some, you know, overpriced stocks and companies that sort of went bankrupt in the stock market kind of crashing. That, you know, that sort of scenario could happen. But what we do know is that it still was the case that the internet transformed the economy, and it still the demand for those services continued to be there. It's just that some of the you know, investment may have gotten a little bit ahead of itself. This was similar in the sense that some of these tech companies and companies that are sort of at the forefront of making these big investments have really large valuations in the stock market. There's a lot of investment flowing towards them. And there's a lot of risk associated with that. So we won't know whether we've overbuilt or underbuilt this for the future, you know, until that future comes. And so as we build it, we just have to think about ways that we can sort of mitigate that risk and make sure that if it turns out that there was some bubble, that it doesn't come back and hit ordinary people too much. So that's why thinking about how we develop that power, who bears the costs, how that risk is distributed is really one of the key questions going forward.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are on that, and we'll be on it here too. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a break and come back and ask that question about the two economies, so to speak. You know, the stock market's going crazy. My you know, jeans pockets are not. Do we have a headline economy and a different economy when we look at our households? Jeff Michael is with us here today as we wrap up. Director of the BBER, Bureau of Business and Economic Research. I got your economic outlook. It's bber.umt.edu. Get there. It's just a ton of good information. Jeff, I've only got like about a minute here too. So a real quick question about, is there two economies? There's one, an investment economy, kind of a headline economy, and then the ones that we're talking about in our household. I can't afford this, or we're going to have to save for that. Is that going on?
It is to some extent. You know, the economy is all interconnected, but we are seeing that incomes from investment are rising, and that's a larger share of total income in the country and in Montana than sort of typical wages and paychecks that people live from, which are also growing, but not quite at the same pace. So there can be some disconnect between the sort of trajectory of things. And you talk about prices and inflation. Yeah, I mean, the inflation is hitting some of those daily staples now. It used to be sort of just housing. It's kind of spreading out, gas prices, right? But also some of the kind of products we buy from everyday life, including things like clothing, are starting to see some price increases. And those hit average everyday households really, really hard.
Yeah, and there are some good signs that is easing too, but still it lags behind a lot of other developments here. Jeff, a ton of information. There's lots more to talk about too. Come on back, okay?
Sure, anytime, Tom.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.